So, hello, good afternoon. I am delighted to be here, to be invited to give this talk. So this is a reprisal of a talk I gave last fall at OSDI. And I'm gonna tell you how we built a bug-free file system without writing any manual proofs. And so file systems are an essential part of an operating system, and they are pretty hard to implement correctly. They have to maintain this complex hierarchical LaunTis data structure, and they have to maintain the correctness and the consistency of this data structure in the face of non-deterministic failures, which can happen at any moment and are apparently more common than you think. So here's a very simple example. This is a patch for EXT4. Where if the system were to crash at a particular moment, data could get lost or be corrupted. And the fix is just a simple adding a simple flush. And while this may seem simple, bugs like these are very hard to track down, and they're just as hard to reproduce. And so even if you think you found the problem and fixed it, it's hard to know if you've done so correctly. And what's also kind of concerning is reading comments like this, where the developer says that the fix is unlikely to be necessary, but required to guarantee correctness, which to me doesn't sound okay. So what can you do about this? Well, we know that verification is an effective tool for building reliable systems. And we can use the power of verification to prove the absence of an entire class of bugs. And while this is a great thing, it usually doesn't come for free. In fact, it tends to look something like this. You write an implementation, and then write about 10 times more code for the proof. But you don't want to write proofs. You want to write code. And we have a way to do that. And so the goal of this project was to completely eliminate the manual proofs. What that means is we don't want to write any manual annotations or proofs about the implementation itself, but we still want a verified file system. And what's more is that if there is any bug, we want to know what it is, with a concrete test case that triggers the bug to help the developer figure out what's going wrong. And this can greatly reduce wasted debugging efforts. And that is what we call push-button verification. And we're going to do all of this by carefully designing the file system to be automatically verified using a state-of-the-art theorem prover, C3, from Microsoft Research. But C3 is not a silver bullet, and there are a number of challenges we need to address to do this. First of all, we need to formalize a notion of correctness. And this notion of correctness needs to capture non-determinism, like crashes and recovery, and it also needs to be automatically verifiable. And not just that, it also needs to scale, because in a file system, we just have way too many states to exhaust. And so prior work in full automation has mostly focused on bug finding, which is very useful in itself, but it's also incomplete in the sense that it cannot give us the kind of formal guarantee that we want. And so in this talk, I present Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil is a toolkit for building push-button verified file systems that addresses those challenges. And for those who are curious about the name, Yggdrasil is named after an immense tree that connects the nine worlds in Norse mythology. After that, I will tell you about crash refinement, which is a definition of correctness that is amenable to fully automatic reasoning and enables modularity to scale verification. And finally, I will talk about the YX06 file system, which is a file system we built, it's a journaling file system, which is similar to EXT3 and the teaching file system XV6. However, unlike those file systems, YX06 guarantees functional correctness and crash safety. So this is a high-level overview of the toolkit. Here, green represents a trusted component that we assume to be correct. And the toolkit then either ensures that the white boxes are correct or finds bugs in them if there are any. So how do you as the developer use this toolkit? Well, you have to write three things, highlighted here at the top. The first one is a specification. That is a high-level abstract file system. Then you write your actual implementation. And finally, you write a small number of consistency invariants, which are predicates that say whether the on-disk image is corrupt or not. And I want to emphasize that point. The predicates are independent of the implementation, and they are predicates of the disk image. In our current prototype, these are all written in a subset of Python. And just to highlight what this looks like, here's a specification for a transactional disk. It exposes three functions, one to start a transaction, one to add a write to the current ongoing transaction, and finally a function to commit the transaction. It's a fairly straightforward description of a multi-block atomic write. So next, these inputs are passed to the verifier. And the verifier tries to prove that your implementation is bug-free with respect to your specification. If the verifier finds a bug, then it produces a concrete test case. And what that means is that you get a concrete disk image, concrete inputs, and a concrete execution of the file system that shows how things can go wrong. After you've fixed all your bugs, the toolkit finally gives you an executable file system that you can mount and run. So that's a high-level overview of the toolkit. And in summary, Yggdrasil is user-friendly and requires no complex logic to use. And if there's any bug, the toolkit generates a concrete test case to identify the bug. But there are a couple of limitations I want to mention. First of all, concurrency is completely out of scope for this project. And we did use a number of unverified tools that we simply have to trust, including a C compiler, Python, Fuse, and of course, the Linux kernel. So now that I told you about the Yggdrasil toolkit, let me tell you how we can verify file systems this way. So a strawman approach is to model the specification and the implementation as two simple state machines, and where each operation takes its current state, any number of inputs, and returns a new state. So the figure here shows how a specification and implementation might transition during a single operation. What we want to prove is that if the implementation and specification start in equivalent states, they should eventually transition to equivalent states. So in this case, if the specification starts in S0, and after one operation transitions to S1, then the implementation should start in an equivalent state I0, and through any number of intermediate states, eventually reach an equivalent state I3. And this is fine, but for file systems, this approach has a fundamental limitation. We cannot use this to prove anything about crashes or other non-deterministic events. So we need to do something slightly different. So here we see the same state diagram as before, but with a number of possible intermediate crash points inserted. And so the intuition behind the verification is that we need to show that if starting in equivalent states, they eventually transition to equivalent states, but also that any state producible by a crash in the implementation should be equivalent to some allowed states in the specification. So let me tell you how we can formalize this intuition. On a high level, we have to do two things. First, we explicitly capture crashes in what we call a crash schedule. Then we're going to use this crash schedule to formally define our notion of correctness, which we call crash refinement. Now, before I get to why this is important, I'm going to define it a bit. So a crash schedule is a set of Boolean variables that explicitly captures non-determinism. So consider this simple program here. It issues two writes. It writes the value v1 to address a1, and writes the value v2 to address a2. Now what we're going to do is try to compute all the possible crash states that this program might produce. And so we need to consider that the first write may or may not succeed. And we're going to do that with a Boolean variable b1. Where a true value of true means that the write succeeds, and a value of false means it does not. And we can take this Boolean variable into account and conditionally update this state. And we will get similar results for the second write. We create a Boolean variable b2, we add it to the schedule, and we update this state accordingly. So from this, we get a Boolean expression representing all possible states that this can be. And it captures all four possible states. Those are both writes can fail, they can both succeed, and because the disk controller can reorder these writes, any one of them can fail while the other one succeeds. So now that we know what the crash schedule is, we can define crash refinement. First, we capture all crash states by computing the crash schedule for each of the file system operations. And now we can say that for each operation, for all states, and inputs, and all implementation schedules, there should exist a specification schedule such that they produce the same output. One important thing to note about this is that crash refinement does require solving quantifiers, which in the general case are undecidable. But our formulation of crash refinement is actually decidable, and you can imagine in the worst case you'd have to search the entire space because it's finite. But C3 is actually quite good at solving this particular form. And the complexity essentially depends on the number of states in the specification. And since the specification is much simpler than the implementation, this is fast in practice. So this is a highly simplified explanation of crash refinement. So I refer you to the paper for the full details on how this works. But in summary, crash refinement is great. It's amenable to fully automatic reasoning using C3. And since the specification is an abstract file system, that means that if the implementation is a crash refinement of the specification, then the implementation is indistinguishable from it. And that allows us to do verification in a modular way. First of all, we can decouple logical and physical data layout. What that means is we can verify a simple but a slow layout first, and then do a separate refinement into a more efficient layout. An example of that is packing inodes into a single block. The crash refinement also allows us to decompose the file system into multiple layers and verify each of those layers separately. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about that and tell you what I mean by that. So this is a simplified view of the ActV6 file system. And now that I told you how we can verify file systems, we can just write a specification, put it on top, and apply the toolkit to verify ActV6, right? Well, that would mean computing the crash schedule I talked about across all of these layers. And the resulting Boolean expression would simply be way too big to solve directly. So we need to do things slightly differently. What we do is we create these separate layers, and we write a specification for each of those layers, where one layer builds on top of the lower layer specification. And that effectively limits the verification to a single layer at a time, allowing us to scale the verification to a complete file system. And if you recall the specification example I showed earlier, that is precisely the code we used to verify the write-out logging implementation in YXV6. So using the stacking of abstractions and a couple of other techniques, we built two variants of the YXV6 file system. First one is a synchronous file system, just like XV6 and EXT4 running in synchronous mode. They persist each system call immediately, making them very easy for users to reason about, but it also makes them pretty slow. And so we built another variant of YXV6, which we call YXV6 group commit. It has a slightly weaker consistency model. It has a slightly weaker consistency model, but it significantly improves performance. So in total, YXV6 is about 2,000 lines of code, and the HTRSTL toolkit is about 1,500 lines of code. And that includes common reusable data structures and a number of useful disk specifications. Using the toolkit, we also built a few other applications, including a very simple log structured file system, a user space copy utility, and the persistent log from the Arrakis OS. And the great part about it is that there are no manual proofs. So now that I told you about the YXV6 file system, I'm going to attempt to answer four evaluation questions. First is, how long does it take to verify YXV6? Is the implementation correct? Meaning, does the file system actually work? How long did it take to build this? And finally, how does it perform? So I'm just going to go ahead and open this. And we can just start the verification real quick and see how long it takes. And since it might take a while, we better come back to this and address those other questions first. So to evaluate the correctness of YXV6, we ran a number of tests, including FSTress, a POSIX compliance test, and we also manually induced crashes and inspected the image after each of those crashes to see if the file system had any problems. None of those uncovered any problems. But finally, we've actually used YXV6. We have even used it for its own development, and it has turned out to be quite stable and reliable. So as to the development effort, when we first started the project, we spent the first 4 months or so exploring different primitives and ways to scale the verification to a complete file system. And after we settled on the current approach, we spent the next 2 or 3 months building YXV6 up to the point where it was fully self-hosting. And after that, we added features, optimizations, such as group commit, and other minor features. So how does YXV6 perform? Here's a graph with two of the benchmarks we ran. And note that runtime on the Y-axis is on a log scale. So here we have the verified file system FSEQ, EXT4, and YX06, all running in synchronous mode. They all have similar performance as they spend most of the time waiting on I/O. The next two are YX06 group commit and EXT4 running in its default configuration. And we can see that they outperform the synchronous versions by quite a bit. And in the best case, YX06 group commit is similar to EXT4. And in the worst case, it's at least a factor of 10 off. So there's still some work to be done. So before I wrap up, let's see how the verification we started earlier is coming along. Do that. So as you can see, it finished in just under 2 minutes. And just to sort of prove that I'm not lying to you, you can just go ahead and comment out one flush or something and try rerunning the verification. And hopefully, in a couple of seconds, we will get back a counterexample. And what that is a concrete disk image, a concrete execution, and concrete inputs that will trigger a bug, meaning that a produced behavior not allowed by the specification. It also produces a concrete stack trace, telling us exactly what execution through this code will produce the undesired behavior. So as you saw, YX06 takes a couple of minutes on my laptop. However, the optimized version, YX06 group commit, does take a bit longer. Because it's parameterized with a larger buffer, it takes about 1.5 hours on a 24-core machine. So in conclusion, we have demonstrated that push-button verification is feasible for file systems. And a key principle here is that using techniques from the programming language community, we can design systems to enable fully automated and scalable verification. And we are looking forward to seeing how we can apply this to different system domains. So please check out the project website at lowcore.system/yggdrasil. There you'll find a link to the paper and the code. And with that, I thank you for listening. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Anand Jai from Yale University. So my first question is about your trust model. You assume the specification is correct and trusted. So, but my question is, in practice, actually, writing specification is not a very trivial thing. If I'm a new programmer, I want to use your tool and I write a specification. Why can I guarantee my specification, you know, meet the properties I want to, you know, I want my file system to have? So. This is the first thing. The second thing is, if my memory is correct, your compiler is trusted in your model, right? So if I use Calc, I guess you know the compiler should be, you know, for example, you know, comcert, and which is trusted. But in your tool and approach, how you guarantee that? So yeah, this is my first question.
So the first question was, how can you trust the specification, essentially, right?
Specification and
yeah.
Compiler. Right?
So in general, of course, you can't. You have to trust the specification. But the point is that the specification is usually much, much simpler than implementation. Mm-hmm. And in our cases, we routinely found bugs in our implementations, but I don't think there was a single case where we realized that specification was buggy. So they are usually just a couple of like 10 lines of code, while the implementation is hundreds or even thousands. So by audit, and because it's much more abstract, it's easier to be confident in your specification in general. The second question was the compilers.
Compiler.
Yeah, so we did use just GCC to compile the code. But of course, we could have used comcert and therefore not relied on the correctness of the compiler. We just didn't.
I know that's your assumption model, but I just don't want to emphasize in practice. I mean, you know, in some sense, it's not very easy to guarantee, right? Anyway, yeah. So I have another small question about your result.
Let's sorry. The next questioner go.
Okay. Sorry. We can talk about this offline. Thank
sure.
you very much.
Hi. So you described your the toolkit, and my question is: do you, the crash schedule that's generated, is that the input data to that, is that also automatic, or do you have to provide the workload or the writes happening in the system?
Can you repeat the question? I'm not sure I...
The crash schedule that you generated, how do you generate that?
How's it
based
crashed?
On what input data? I mean, based on what workload do you generate that?
Right, so can go back a few slides. So every single layer is built on top of a specification. And the bottom layer here is our specification for how disk behaves. Basically that writes can be reordered and there are explicit flushes, like barriers. And you can write different specifications at the lower layer if you have a different
crash. Right, but the exact crashes that you were exploring, how do you come up with them?
So when you get generate a crash schedule like you showed, does the user have to specify anything or is that entirely automatic?
That is entirely automatic, derived from the specification that an implementation is built on. So that will be derived from the disk specification.
I see.
You can take it offline.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
I was just wondering how sort of reusable are these specifications? Like, would you use the same specification for like any POSIX compliant file system, or like for EXT3 and F2FS? Or I'm seeing here with the layers, would you need to sort of like re-specify a lower layer depending on how you wanted to actually construct your file system?
That's a good question. So the specifications are reusable, and we use the top specification there for both the log search file system and for the Y66 file system.
Right.
The write-out logging specification I showed earlier, it doesn't mention write-out logging. It's just an atomic write, so you can use copy and write or whatever to fulfill that.
Right.
But the specifications do contain the crash consistency model. So if you have two file systems that have a widely different model, then they would need different specifications.
Right, but that then comes down to the features or the behavior, the actual, you know, what that file system does. Okay, thanks.